Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 123. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in once again for my co-host David Todd is Alex Kozora. We're doing this podcast Monday evening because I got to take a little puppy to the vet first thing Tuesday morning, so we figured we'd knock it out now, so just in case there are any hold up on Tuesday. So happy Monday evening, Alex.
Happy Monday evening, Dave. Good to be back.
Yes, indeed. We got a lot of great feedback from our last show that included an interview with Charlie Batch. Appreciate everybody chiming in on Twitter and email and in the post and all. It's such good feedback. I don't see how we won't be able to get Charlie Batch back again. Now, obviously, a lot of that will depend on his schedule. We'll see maybe if we can get him before the start of the regular season to talk a little bit more about the quarterback play that he sees or observed during the preseason games. But it was good to get that kind of analysis from him on the quarterback position.
Absolutely. I think I said it last time. I think we said it last time, Dave, that it was good to get that perspective, someone that has a viewpoint that certainly we, and I assume virtually everyone listening to the podcast, has never experienced before, someone that's been in that locker room, someone that's been in those situations as a fringe guy, turn backup, turn starter, turn fringe guy, that whole process that Batch went through throughout his Steelers career. So someone that can articulate that well, explain it well to people like you and I. It was great to have him on, and I hope to have him on again soon.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially if we can get him right after the preseason to talk about what he observes, what he had observed, that would be great. I might try to reach out to Bruce Gretkowski at some point too, maybe get his take on the whole arm strength thing and velocity along those lines.
Bring in all the backup quarterbacks. Get me Leftwich and Dennis Dixon and St. Pierre.
I tell you, Leftwich would be one really to talk to because he's a quarterback coach.
Yeah, I don't think he's willing to talk right now.
I don't think now is a good time, being as how he's employed with a different NFL team, but we'll see what we can get moving forward here. It is Monday, July the 9th. That means exactly really 1 week from today, Alex, we will know the status of Le'Veon Bell. Of course, the 16th is the deadline for the Steelers to get him signed to a long-term deal. Not a lot of optimism, league-wide with analysts and people who follow the team closely, and that's certainly understandable now that it's gotten down to this point. I probably have the most optimism of anybody, but even with that said, I'm not going to be surprised if nothing gets done here with them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're Tom Hanks on the island with your volleyball, Dave, screaming to anyone that'll listen. Though I think that it's still possible. I'm not going to rule it out, and I'm not surprised in the least that a deal hasn't gotten done already. I've always thought that if it was going to happen, it would happen right before the deadline, right at the 11th hour. But I don't have a whole lot more to add. I don't think anyone else really does as well. We know the situation. We know that Bell's not going to accept less than $14.5 million. That's the number that he's said. Now, that's not necessarily the number that he's asking for, that he'll settle for. But we know that he was asked straight up by ESPN, will you take less than the franchise tag? And he said no. So we know that is the absolute floor. We know the Steelers offered somewhere, reportedly, because we don't know it, but we assume that they offered somewhere around $13.1 million last year. So we know right off the bat there's about $1.5 million gap, best case scenario, and that doesn't get into all the particulars of the deal, which are going to be so critical. So I've always been pessimistic from last year to this year. My stance has not changed. I will again say that there is a chance it gets done because I think both sides want to get a deal done, and both sides have acted in good faith, and some of the tension I think has calmed down in the last couple months, but certainly not optimistic on my end.
assuming he doesn't sign, and assuming he's allowed to hit free agency, after the 2018 season is over, do you think there's a team out there willing to pay him the $14, $15 million per season?
Yes. Not only do I think that there's a team, I know that there's a team, because you get him on the market. Guys like him rarely get on the open market, and you have five or six teams that are flush with cap space competing for him is going to drive the price up. So I guarantee you he will get at least $15 million per year on the open market should he hit it.
All right, we'll stay in wait-and-see mode in the meantime. And you know, like I said, by this time next week, we'll know whether or not he's going to be a Steeler past 2018 season. Okay, moving forward, I got busy. The last few days I've been wondering. It pretty much stems back to me in my contextualization of Mason Rudolph and all of his throws from last season, and really overall his red zone throws throughout his entire career, and not only his red zone attempts, but the throws that went into the end zone. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I wonder what Ben Roethlisberger's stats were last season when it comes to not just red zone throws, but throws into the end zone. And, you know, that's something that fortunately we chart as part of our yearly offensive game-by-game charting, so it wasn't too hard for me to pull up those numbers. One thing that I did not have enough time to do was to look to see how Roethlisberger's numbers compare to quarterbacks around the league. And at some point I would like to try to see where he ranks. But overall, just for a quick post and to talk about today, last season Roethlisberger attempted 41 pass attempts inside the red zone in which the football traveled in the air to at least the goal line or further. And of those attempts, only 13 of them, 31.7%, were completed for touchdowns. Now, 31.7% completion percentage isn't good. It's somewhat acceptable when you're talking about deep pass attempts of longer than 15 yards. But when talking in general about inside the red zone and throws into the end zone, 31.7 seems low. Now, obviously the 13 that he completed went for touchdowns, so there is that. 12 of those red zone end zone targets went to Antonio Brown, and he caught five of them. Tight end Jesse James and now former wide receiver Martavis Bryant each had two receptions in the end zone, while Eli Rogers, Justin Hunter, Vance McDonald, and Juju Smith-Schuster each had one. Also, 12 of Roethlisberger's red zone end zone completions came from the 10-yard line and closer. Those 12 completions, however, were part of 30 overall attempts in that area of the field. What will I find if I go back and run those same kind of stats for Roethlisberger, not just last year, but probably the previous 3 years?
Oh, man, I have no idea. I mean, I would say, intuitively that they're better, but with the way the red zone offense has kind of been, I consider it very much underwhelming for, basically the entire Tomlin tenure, you might get pretty similar numbers. Do you know how many he completed? These were for touchdowns, to be 13, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, every one that he completed in the end zone obviously was was for a touchdown there. So,
what do you think? Could you have an answer to your own question? Do you think it'll be better from the last three?
Well, here's the thing: has Roethlisberger ever been regarded as a great red zone passer?
I guess not, but I don't know how many quarterbacks are specifically considered great red zone passers. I mean, there are that are. I think most quarterbacks are just generally good are also just considered successful in the red zone.
Well, successful enough, right?
Right. I mean, I can think like Marcus Mariota is one specifically that kind of gets lauded for how efficient he is in the red zone. But other than that, I think if you ask who are the best red zone quarterbacks, people are probably just going to give you the Brady's and Rodgers and just elite quarterbacks in general.
Right. I mean, overall, and it's kind of deceptive, I think, in the red zone, because you know a completed pass, you know a completed pass, if it's not a successful play, you know, what I mean by that is, you know, unless you're converting on a third down situation, those type of things, generally when you're inside the red zone, you're looking for, I would think at least a 50% completion percentage, and then it, you know, look, the whole goal of the game is to put the ball in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I've never regarded Ben as a super great red zone passer, and I think when you look specifically at breaking down his throws into the end zone, that's where we find a little bit of probably where most of his problems are. Now, mm-hmm. you know, is this a byproduct of him kind of, you know, we always kind of have fun saying, you know, Ben likes his receivers college open sometimes, but, you know, is this, you know, I think what I'm getting at here is I think there's enough there with these stats to drill further down into going back into his last, say, 3 years or so to see exactly how he has been when throwing the ball into the end zone.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely think that it's something worth looking at, and I thought you had the interesting kind of just short addition at the end of your article, having Brady 16 of 34 in 2017, Carson Wentz 16 of 26, so just a very quick baseline comparison. Ben's lagging behind both those guys, and I think that's a product of Ben having more of that gunslinger mentality than, you know, some of these other quarterbacks, where Ben's going to try to fit it into a window that may or may not exist. And I think that you're right in the overall sense that Ben's probably been, and this is fairly accurate, but regarded as a inefficient, not an in, but less efficient quarterback than some of the others, the Bradys and the Peyton Mannings and players like that. So it's not a surprise to see in the red zone, where efficiency is so important, to see Ben kind of lag behind a little bit.
You know, I'm not saying he's bad in the red zone. I'm just right. saying that I think part of his problem is these throws into the end zone for one reason mm-hmm. or another. You know, is it on the receiver? Is, you know, how many of these were drops? I haven't right. dug that far down into it. But I mean, he's obviously has had. A drop or two in the end zone. I mean, I think even Jesse's had at least one of them. You know, I think we mm-hmm. can recall recent times here.
And it's funny that you started this, because even before you posted this, I finally got around to start looking at all the red zone incompletions from last year to kind of get an idea of some of the issues with the red zone inefficiency. And it's too early for me to kind of make any conclusions, but there's definitely some plays where receivers could have made a play on the football and didn't haul it in.
Right, we don't see a lot of Ben throwing the fade, do we?
Again, it's hard to compare it. I mean, he's done it a couple times. I prefer them not to, because it is such a low percentage play. I mean, there was one play I looked at earlier today where they threw a back shoulder fade to Justin Hunter, and it's like, you know, they got AB in the slot, you got Bell split out. Give me those guys if you can. Then a fade to your number four, number five receiver. So I prefer it to keep them that way with not throwing the fade.
I think. You know, my theory behind all this, look, I mean, one of the things, red zone efficiency, in general, regardless of the quarterback, remember that post that I did, I don't know, I guess it was a time when Randy Featner was named the new offensive coordinator, and just looking back at red zone, success rates, you know, under Haley and under Arians and under, who was before him, Wisenhunt. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's never been great, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, like I said, the Tomlin era, only once have they finished in the top 10 in red zone efficiency.
So, you know, this is obviously, and it's been highlighted, you know, since Randy Featner took over, that this is one area for sure that we want to see, because they get down there quite a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, how many times... You know, you convert one, you know, you settle for a field goal versus, you know, converting, you know, to a touchdown, you know, once a game can make a huge difference over a course of a season.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's the number one thing I want to see improved under Randy Featner-led offense. And I think, you told a comment earlier today, and I think you're right, that it's unfair to pin it all on Todd Haley. It's happened before Haley, it could happen after Haley, and there's multiple layers of issues for why this red zone offense isn't as successful as it should be. But certainly one area that I'm hoping that Fitner can kind of turn things around.
And when you consider, I don't have Roethlisberger's. Do you have Roethlisberger's red zone splits?
No.
From
I don't.
From last year. Let me see if I can pull those up real quick here. Red zone passing stats per Pro Football Reference last year. 48 of 89. So he was 52% or almost 53% overall in the red zone last year. So if how many total throws did I say that he had?
89.
Throws into the end zone. He had 41. So 41 of, you know, almost, you know, a little less than half of his attempts went into the red zone. So, I mean, went into the end zone. So, you know, if you were to subtract those out, what would his, you know, what would his completion percentage be, you know, on throws not inside mm-hmm. the red zone? And the answer is a lot higher than nearly 53%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's something that's just tough to try to look at and evaluate because you don't have the other numbers to compare it to, the other quarterbacks. And, you know, it's hard to look at that number on at face value and say this is good, this is bad. It's something worth exploring, but it's a little hard for me at least to say how good of a red zone quarterback he is without a lot of other data to compare it to.
Right. And that's one thing I don't know. It takes, you know, being this how we don't chart all these other teams, I have to go through the play-by-play. I was able to cobble together the Tom Brady and the Carson Wentz stats for my post this morning on it. And that took, you know, an hour and a half to do that.
If you ask Matthew Marcy to chart all 30 teams, he would leave immediately. He would never hear from him again.
Yeah, he would quit on the spot probably. and you can't rightly blame him either. but you know, when you look at, you know, Wentz had nearly a 64% completion percentage of just red zone throws mm-hmm. overall, and Brady, you know, 58%. So I just wonder, you know, what I would find going back the last three seasons with Roethlisberger. And, you know, if all three, let's say over a span of four seasons, it's below 40% on throws into the end zone. Would you consider that a problem?
Potentially. Again, I would like to see other quarterbacks. It's like I said, it's hard for me even looking at Ben himself. You know, I want to compare it to other quarterbacks. But yeah, I think it's, obviously, red zone's been an issue, and I assume that most of the numbers in that area aren't particularly great. So, yeah, it's something you want to get better at to get closer to that 50% mark.
Right, and that, like I said, I'm not saying at all that Ben's bad in the red zone. I just think this might be a part of the problem that if improved upon, I think would make a world of difference. And you can bet mm-hmm. now that I've highlighted it and we've discussed it, that it'll be something that I'll track throughout the season, 2018 season moving forward here. But it was something that came to, you know, we talk all the time about, or we have talked in the past about, you know, red zone and Roethlisberger's numbers inside the red zone. And I thought, you know, it would be a good angle to drill it down specifically with throws into the end zone. And that's what I started to do there. And like I said, I plan on trying to research the previous 3 years. And I think if we do find that it's under 40%, then, you know, it might be a little bit of the problem.
Yeah. When do you think you're going to look at this again? Later this week, or just kind of an ongoing thing?
You know me, whenever I get a section of time to dedicate it to it. Obviously, you know, once the preseason gets going, it's going to be tough to do that and all. So maybe within the next week or so, I'll be able to knock those out. I'll have to go back and look at the charting to see what we have as far as pass distances on those. And one thing that makes it even tougher too is a lot of times, or really all the time, even the NFL, you know, if you're on the 10-yard line and you throw a pass into the back of the end zone, it still goes down as a passing distance of 10 yards. So that's one thing I wish, you know, talking about advanced stats and all like that, I wish they would actually calculate into the end zone throws, you know.
Yeah.
That would make it a lot easier. I mean, because we've reached the era now of advanced stats where all these things should be at a fingertip, you know.
Yeah, I've always been jealous of, like, not to get too off topic, but, you know, tennis and how incredible their technology is to being able to receive the balls, you know, out of play, whatever the term is, or not. They have that instant. I think that's, you know, the NFL obviously is making huge strides, but I look at a sport like that and say, wow, why can't the NFL be able to be as precise as that in some of their technology and some of their analytics?
We have freaking laser beams these days.
I get the reference. I get a movie reference.
Oh, Dave, you finally get one. Okay, yeah. You know, we've got laser beams nowadays. All this stuff should pop up at a moment's notice on the fly here. But anyway, you know, I thought that was worth researching, and I'll try to dig a little bit deeper into that with Roethlisberger and those throws into the end zone. Another thing that's been driving me bonkers lately is all these recent posts you probably see around the interwebs about Jalen Samuels. And, man, I read some of this stuff, and it's quite obvious that people have not watched his tape still. You know, all this time after he's drafted, and with YouTube and all, and really all of the North Carolina State games from last year are up on YouTube. So, you know, it doesn't take long to go through a handful of two or three games to get a good sense of what he is. But, you know, all people want to look at is that total number of receptions that Jalen Samuels had. And then they want to go off of things like, you know, Pro Football Focus had a very kind of bland stat about all the places where Jalen Samuels lined up during the 2017 season at North Carolina State. And you read people talking about, well, he's a fullback, he's a tight end. No, he's not. He lined up there quite a bit. You know, he lined up in the slot quite a bit. He lined up as an H-back off the line of scrimmage quite a bit. He lined up in the slot there. But that's not, you know, just because you line up there doesn't necessarily mean you can play that position. They purposely line him up on different parts of the field to get him the football out in space. And I've gone play by play with his receptions and contextualized all of them. And if you look at the end results on here, of his 76 total receptions last season, and make no mistake, 76 catches is a bunch of receptions when you look at that just on a pure, you know, single number reception. You know, oh, wow, he caught 76 passes. But 45 of those were actually caught behind the original line of scrimmage. Additionally, only 16 of his receptions came more than 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, and 13 of those consisted of him lining up in the slot. Now, he's not, all that said, he's not an accomplished route runner. He did a lot of those, especially out of the slot. He did a lot of those kind of those short hitches, 4 yards and you know, short curls type of things. Had a lot of catches that way. They used them a lot in the screen game, whether it be the bubble screen or the smoke screen. Line him out wide for those long across the field wide receiver screens. A lot of that he did. They had, in fact, I have 15 of his receptions last year were him getting a short pitch from the quarterback as part of either a shovel pass, and I wrote end around. I probably should categorize that more of a jet sweep because he's running in front of the quarterback. But 15 of his receptions came that way, where, you know, it's basically a short handoff, if you will. You know, with so many of his receptions behind the original line of scrimmage, his average target distance of those 76 receptions was a dismal 1.11 yards past the original line of scrimmage. I mean, that's, you know, now don't get me wrong. He did have, you know, what I say here, only 16 of his receptions came more than 5 yards past the line of scrimmage. He can run that seam. Okay. And he caught a few passes that way. He can run the wheel. Okay, he had a couple of catches, one wide open against Marshall that went for a touchdown, sort of off of a trick play where got handed off and then tossed back to the quarterback. But generally, this is not a guy that's an established route runner. And, you know, if people are wanting him used in Pittsburgh the way he was used in the passing game at North Carolina State, there are going to be a lot of people calling for Randy Feetner's head. Because how many times do you see people complaining about, oh, the screens, oh, the wide receiver screens, enough of those. He was used a lot that way. I did all this as a caution. Now, can he become – here's another interesting fact, that only a handful, three, four, five of his receptions – came with him actually originally lined up as a traditional running back. So he doesn't have a lot of experience of, you know, say a play action fake and then, you know, weeding, you know, getting himself through the offensive line and then sitting down, a la what we see Le'Veon Bell do quite a bit of. He just does not have the resume for that. So, you know, I caution people when looking at these 76 total receptions. And when looking at thinking that, you know, you got another tight end, H-back, whatever, slot receiver here, you know, if you watch the tape, you know, it's not what many people think that he is.
Exactly, Dave, and definitely well said. You know, Samuels is not a tight end. He's not a fullback. What he did in college doesn't always translate to the NFL. That's true of any college player. I think he's an advanced route runner and receiver for a running back, but he's not an advanced route runner if you consider him like a receiver. He's below average. He's going to be a bigger guy. He's not going to be a shifty. He's not going to be able to create a lot of space in his route. He's going to use his size to be able to try to box guys out and get those mismatches on linebackers. That's how he's going to win as a receiver. So, you know, I think that's really well said and really well informed. I'm sure it'll be ignored by most people in the media, and you're going to hear the same old kind of tropes. But I think you bring up a really important point about, you know, him not getting much work as a receiver coming out of the backfield. And most of his receptions were coming either on some sort of design and around shovel pass or him being split out. That goes back to his pass protection, which we know is an area that's fairly raw in his game. A lot of the plays that Bell makes are check releases, where you're having to identify potential blitzers, scan, see if they come. If they don't, then you go out and your route underneath. Also, if you have to process quickly and do perfectly. So one area that Samuels has to work on there, just because he didn't run a lot of routes out of the backfield.
And look, he can you line him up as an H-back just off the line of scrimmage and then run the misdirect? You know, he had, I forget how many they were, 8, 9, 10 of kind of these misdirections where it looks like the ball is going one direction. He's coming across the formation out of the H-back position with those kind of those designed screens that way. He can do that. He can catch the football. You don't register 76 receptions not being able to catch the football. So he can catch the football. And look, I mean, because he had so many catches behind the original line of scrimmage, he had a lot of yak. Okay? I mean, he better have. There's going to be a lot of lost yardage in there. And it's worth noting that 513 of his 597 total receiving yards came after the catch. I mean, that's a large percentage. And, you know, they just didn't have a lot of good weapons there, and they had to find a way to get him the ball in space when they had the other running back on the field.
Yeah, it was Nyheim Hines that they had, and they had to find ways to get both on the field. But, you know, in a way, that'll help Samuels because he's coming into a similar situation in Pittsburgh where you have, obviously, Bell, who's rarely going to come off the field, certainly will not come off the field at the expense of Jalen Samuels. Samuels won't truly replace him, so it'll be interesting. That's definitely one of the first things we'll hopefully get a good eye at camp to see exactly how they're lining him up, how much in the slot he's getting, how much in the backfield he's getting. I think it's going to be fairly, maybe not an even split, but it'll definitely get a good dose, I think, as a slot receiver, and we'll see how he looks and go from there.
Yeah, and, you know, it will be interesting during the preseason if they do line him up in the slot. Are they going to line him up with another back in the backfield, or is it going to be empty sets there? And then what kind of routes is he going to run out of the slot? We already talked about he does a lot of those quick 4-yard hitch routes. The other times when light up in the slot, he would be part of the wide receiver screen out of the slot there. You don't find a lot of instances where him running out of the slot, going down the middle of the field on, you know, on a route 7 or more yards. Now, he did do that, and he made some nice catches when doing so, but why wouldn't you have, if you're going to do that with a running back, then why wouldn't that running back be Le'Veon Bell?
Exactly. That's why the preseason will be the best chance to look at that kind of stuff. I don't expect whatever route Samuels does run to be any really advanced. It's going to be within, 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. It's going to be the one-step slant. It'll be the screen, like you said. It'll be maybe at most a curl, the wheel they could try him on, naturally get him open. They'll have to get him open scheme-wise. He's not going to create that space himself.
And look, I mean, I've already contextualized all of his carries. He can run. He can run out of the running back position. We've seen him do that. I want to see more of that than anything else during the preseason with him. I want to see him actually function more as a true running back lined up behind a quarterback, not only as a runner, but as a pass catcher out of that position. Then also, we've talked, 100 times, his ability to block.
And I think that's what the Steelers want to see as well. I think they have a pretty good feel for what he can offer as a receiver because he did it so much at NC State that the evaluation is not going to be much of a projection at the NFL level, especially compared to most running backs. But as a runner, you're right. He did it a decent amount, but a lot of it was so kind of gimmicky that you didn't get as good a feel for it. So that's what they brought him in for as a running back. That's his position, clearly defined. He'll be used in multiple ways. But yeah, that's going to be the big test. And assuming Bell's not there, there's a chance for a lot of carries for Samuels.
How surprised will you be if he does not make the 53?
I'll be pretty surprised because I think he's going to offer so much value in every area, including special teams, where he could potentially do a little bit of return work, but more likely being able to run down some coverage, run down some punts and some kicks, especially kicks, maybe punts, maybe not, depending on how things kind of shake up with the lineup. But I think they like him. I think they like the potential, the work ethic, the motivation, and just, again, a pretty unique skill set for a college running back. And I think that they're going to want to keep him around. And I'm not sure, Ridley's obviously got some talent, and Toussaint's a known guy, but what are they going to bring to the table enough? I'm not sure if I see it.
All right. Anything else to wrap up on Jalen Samuels? Man, we've hit him hard at different points during, since he was drafted here. But I think hopefully people will not only read the post, but go watch. I linked every one of those plays. If you click on about 15, 20 of them, you're going to get a good sense of how he was used overall. And I'm talking all 4 years at North Carolina State in the passing game.
Yeah. So like I said, I don't think people are going to change their mind too much, even with the facts in front of them. But I'm glad that you did the legwork. And I liked, I think Vince Williams got a chuckle out of it when you said on Twitter, if I stand in a garage, doesn't make me a car. So
right.
I hopefully he was laughing in agreement of you. I wasn't entirely sure where he was going with it.
But unless he's seen something totally different at practice.
All right. I guess we'll find out here in 2 weeks.
And if he has seen something totally different in practice, it's something something Samuels hasn't put on tape.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should ask him. You should ask him.
And we'll find out soon enough here with preseason coming. All right. How about a guy that actually does play tight end? Xavier Grimble. You wrote earlier today, 2018, a critical season for Xavier Grimble. Tell us why.
Well, I was just thinking more about the podcast we did on Friday and just talking about the tight end position and just trying to get some ideas of something to write about. And, you asked me if we've seen Grimble's ceiling, and I answered that I don't think we have, but I recognize that this is probably the last chance he has to show that ceiling because this team could easily draft someone next year, or, whether that's replacement for Vance or Jesse. They're likely to, bring in somebody at some point. And I think you can only hang on to potential and hope for so long. I mean, you're not going to be the number three tight end for 3-4 seasons in a row. Eventually, you get replaced to try to find someone who could become more than that. So Grimble's always been a bit frustrating because he looks good getting off the bus, his work ethic strong. He's one of the most kind of ripped and shredded dudes on this roster, but you get into camp, you get into games, he kind of shrinks. And there's been conditioning problems the last two camps where he's had to bow out of practice because of heat-related matters down at St. Vincent. Trying to get him on the field has been difficult, and I don't think he's always been necessarily totally reliable and has the complete trust of the coaching staff the way that Jesse James does, because Grimble has a higher ceiling than Jesse James, but James is available every practice, every game. He'll play through injuries, a tough guy. Not to say that Grimble isn't, but clearly there's that trust there with James that I don't think exists with Grimble. So it's a time to put it all together now for Grimble, and hopefully he shows up in camp in the preseason.
And being a number three tight end, you better be able to play some special teams, and it's never been one of his stronger suits. One assisted tackle, I think, last year on special teams. 2016 for Grimble, he had, I'm trying to find out. I don't think he had much of anything I don't think he had any special teams tackles in 2016 on special teams. Now, tackles is not the end-all, do-all when it comes to special teams. What do you – and you have covered quite a bit of kick and punt coverages over the years. What do you see him when it comes to him being an asset on coverage units?
Yeah, you're not going to get a lot there, and that's okay. I certainly don't want tight ends running down kicks and punts. Generally, no. I mean, the Steelers have done it a little bit in the past. Remember, Matt Spaeth used to be the right wing, and that was kind of a disaster. That playoff game against Denver, it was just a mess. He couldn't move anywhere. That's when I think when Rosie got hurt and they had to put Spaeth back in. So, generally speaking, your tight ends aren't going to do much in the coverage units. It's going to be blocking, kick return, field goal blocking. I think when Tua got hurt. They've had Grimble loses that wing on the field goal team, which had some mixed results. So, you're not going to find the value in necessarily tackles, like you pointed out. But you're right that Grimble doesn't really carry a ton of value. Certainly nothing that another number three tight end couldn't provide you.
I tell you, until that game against that preseason game against the Colts last year, I think it was their third preseason game. That's where he really kind of turned the corner, or at least noticeable improvement as far as his run blocking went.
Yeah, I think that's what I pointed out in the post. I was really impressed by it, and I kind of got that feel in camp last year, the way he hit the sleds this past year compared to his first year in 2016. It was a noticeable difference, and he put on some good tape as a blocker, and we know what he can bring as a receiver. So like I said, there's that frustration there because you can see the flashes and you can see that he kind of can bring the whole package when it comes together, but it's about being consistent, being available, and just having that trust, and it just isn't quite there yet.
Because of the way the preseason goes and the amount of playing time that we expect him to get, he should be a guy that really sticks out in the positive in during this preseason.
I sure hope so. Like I said, it's going to be, because once the season starts, if he's in number three, reps are going to be fairly limited like they have been, like you would expect for any number three tight end. So, he's a guy that there's still excitement for. Like I said, I don't believe he's hit his ceiling yet. I think he can get better and be a more consistent player, but he's got to show it or they're just going to move on.
Speaking of special teams, far too penalized last year, and one of those guys is no longer with the team.
And thank goodness for that. Yeah, I had the article today. Marcus Mosher from Bleacher Report charted the special teams penalties. Steelers had what? I'm pulling up the article now. 23, which is tied for the sixth most. But like you said, the guy that was responsible for most of those, J.J. Wilcox, no longer on the team. So certainly another area special teams needs to improve on.
Yeah, one wiped out, and I think it wasn't it kind of a ticky-tack call on the Martavis Bryant return for a touchdown that got wiped out.
Yeah, I think so. Down the right side.
Yeah, but he's not there, and you're hoping that some of these, you got safeties galore now, and some of these younger linebackers. Obviously you have if Matakevich stays healthy, he's going to be, he's a real strength on special teams. Roosevelt Nix, real strength on special teams. If Darius Heyward-Bey makes the unit or makes the 53, he should again be a special teams warrior once again. Who else?
Burhe, core special team.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Burhe has a nice resume when it comes to special teams. So, yeah.
Chick, another core special teamer.
Yeah, and Chickenall hasn't been bad, has he?
Yeah, I mean he's done everything. I think he led the team in special team snaps last year, or was top three for sure. So yeah, that's where he's bringing his value at.
me see if I can pull you up who the leaders were last year. Special teams tackles. Matakevich had 14 total, wow. Along with a block. That block.
And another half block, right? You got a deflection of one.
Yeah. L.J. Fort, believe it or not, 7 total tackles, 2 assists. 9 in total. That's a guy. Is he going to make it?
I think it's a guy we have to remember in that inside linebacker group. I know we talk about everybody but L.J. Fort. Even we talk about Matthew Thomas more than L.J. Fort. But, you know, Fort's been a guy that's been excellent in special teams. I think that goes back to kind of his defensive background. You know, he's played mostly inside for Pittsburgh, but he's also played the edge before early in his time as a Steeler and I think in Cleveland as well. So he's got that hand used to be able to shed blocks and stay clean. I think that's helped him out on the coverage team. That's been that's kind of a key for me of successful special teamers. So I'm not going to anoint Thomas that job. He's got to prove it, and he had issues with consistency and kind of processing. And if you're not detail oriented anywhere, but especially on special teams, you're not going to make it. So I'm not saying that he is going to make it for it, but I think he's a guy that should not be discounted.
Mike Hilton, little Mike Hilton, 6 special teams tackles, 4 assists last year. Roosevelt Nix, 6-4 as well, too. Cody Sensabaugh, 5 tackles, but that's a guy that, you know, probably on we would consider probably on the outside of the bubble looking in right now, right?
Mm, definitely.
Sean Davis, 2. Robert Golden, no longer on a team, 2 tackles, 2 assists. Then it starts really falling off from there. Vince Williams, 1 special teams tackle last year.
Yeah, but he had his snaps cut down really heavily as a starter.
And T.J. Watt, we don't expect to see him play any much of any special teams this year. Had 1 tackle, 1 assist on special teams last year during the regular season there. So,
which was dumb that they had him run down punts. That's what they had him as a left tackle on punts and then make him play defense. That was very stupid.
Arthur Motes, no longer on a team, 2 or not currently on a team, 2 tackles, 1 assist last year on special teams as well, too. Are you expecting this unit to be better than last year's?
Overall or in one particular area?
Yeah, just overall, in general.
Well, I mean, I think it was pretty good last year. Obviously, Boswell had an excellent year. I thought Barry was better than people think that he was.
Did you remember that post I did earlier in the offseason about, look, I mean, you can't, you know, if you're at the opposition 40-yard line and you're punting, you've got limited distance to work with, you know. And I think if you look at available distance versus actual punting yardage, he was up there. You know, I think he is. Would he uncork a JV one every once in a while? Yes.
Sure.
But yeah. But I think he's better than advertised. I'm not going to call him a top 5 punter in the league, but, you know, I think you could have a talk that he's probably top 10.
Yeah, I think maybe 10, right around there would be good. I mean, he's not Sam Cook. He's not Marquette King. He's not one of those upper echelon guys, but I can't remember exactly all that I concluded from it, but I charted a good portion of his punts last year. And the Steelers just valued placement more than the distance. And a lot of it was, like you said, because the offense was successful, they would drive and they would get near midfield. And if they stalled out, well, now you're looking for placement. You're not looking to boom at 60 yards because that does nothing for you if you're at your own 50. So, anyway, to the point, yeah, you know, Barry, I think, is better than expected. And you have Candidate, who did a good job last year. The coverage units were overall pretty solid. They did a good job of not allowing any sort of big explosive plays. The penalties did hurt them. That's got to get cleaned up. The return game has got to be better. I think that's been a systemic issue with this team for a couple of years now, just not having the options, not having the guys, and the kick return situation out of the gate last year was a mess. It was probably the most infuriating part of the Steelers' coaching decisions was having Juju and Terrell Watson do the week one return when they didn't return anything in the preseason. So, you know, hopefully that can get off to a better start than what it was last year in the punt return situation, and I guess it's still a little up in the air.
Yeah, we expect Juju to be the kick returner, right?
Yeah, because I guess it's a little less than ideal for me, but I'm not entirely sure what other options they're going to go with.
And then punt return, I mean, until somebody takes the job away from AB.
Yeah, they've been trying to take the job away from AB since Jacoby Jones, and they just haven't found that guy. So like I said, they got to figure out if they're going to bring Eli back or if Quadri Henderson's going to be able to make some noise or like I said, they just got to add some more return guys. You know, Danny Smith openly said that they have last year they had the fewest return guys on a roster in the NFL, and that to me is a big problem.
Do you think Eli gets signed by the time training camp gets started?
I mean, he's looking good in the videos he's posting. I mean, I guess a lot of it's been straight line-ish. I don't know if he's graduated to kind of cutting yet, but that's a tight turnaround from January to August for camp. So I think he gets brought back at some point. I just don't know when he's going to get fully cleared.
Okay, where do we go from here? We need to
real quick the supplemental draft. I just wanted to touch on that. That's coming up. What is that? Wednesday supplemental draft day. You're expecting any movement from the Steelers there?
No, I'll be shocked. I mean, but hey, there's a first time for everything, right? Where are you? It's so late in the process, and you've got such a full group of cornerbacks right now. If the speculation is right that it's going to take it, you know, third or fourth or even a fifth to get a couple of these guys, you know, you're to me, in doing so, you have to carry those guys then on your 53 and then try to get these guys to play catch up. You know, unless one of these guys that you know right out of shoot can be an instant impact on special teams. I mean, I don't see any roster spots for him. I really don't.
Well, I think you could create the roster spot. Like, I'm cool with Brandon Bryant over Deshaun Phillips or someone like that. I mean, I'm okay with that. You can sell that to me. It's just a question of, like,
but
you said,
but you don't think Deshaun Phillips is going to make the 53, though, right?
Right. Well, that's my point. You know, I'm okay with drafting Brandon Bryant if that means cutting Deshaun Phillips. I have no problem with that. That'll create the roster spot.
I'm thinking long term to 53.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, but there's still, you put on the practice squad, they could still fall through that way, or, you know, just come in and compete and you see what happens. It's a talented group, though, of supplemental picks that usually doesn't happen. So that's really the reason why we're talking about the supplemental draft, is that there's guys that will get drafted this year. There's Sam Beal, which is going to be probably the first name off the board, who I know is rumored to go in the second round. I kind of doubt that. I think third at the earliest. My guess is going to be a fourth round pick when all is said and done. But you have Adonis Alexander and Brandon Bryant, Mississippi State. So there is some draftable talent this year, and kind of a neat-ish, you know, area the Steelers have tried to address certainly over the last couple of years. So I don't rule it out. But I mean, like you said, the odds of them doing it are going to be unlikely, like it is for any team.
And because they so late in the order too, they'd probably have to overbid a round two anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they just sit and wait and hope that someone drops to them. I don't think that you go in the plane with overbidding. You just sit, and if someone drops where the value is really strong, then you do it. If not, you know, you sit and you pass everyone up, and that's fine. My guess is that obviously it won't happen, but I think especially because the Steelers aren't expected to really get any comp picks for next year. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Dave, but I don't think they're really going to get anything. So if had they felt like they were going to get like a fourth for Hubbard or something, maybe they would have done it. But, you know, if you're not going to get those picks, you're going to be one short in the draft, and probably something the Steelers don't want
to
do.
Yeah, I'll be stunned if I'm having to write a post about the Steelers making a pick in the supplemental draft here for sure. Where are we now? We are talking wide receiver position group ahead of training camp. Obviously starts with AB and Juju. A little something in the trib this morning, wondering about Juju in the slot, right?
Well, the question was, the Steelers need an answer in the slot. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the premise, and I reject that premise entirely. The issue is going to be for the Z receiver, for the outside guy, because when this team goes 11 personnel, Juju's going to be in the slot. He can play the Z in 12 personnel or two receiver sets, and when you go three, Juju kicks inside. Slot problem solved.
Right. I mean, there's no argument from me there. When you're in two wide receiver sets, most of the time it's going to be AB and Juju on the field. The question then becomes, you know, can you get James Washington on the field week one to start taking the bulk of those Z snaps? And logic would tell you, based on his history at Oklahoma State, how Marty seems to be, him being a more complete route runner than maybe a lot of people give him credit for, one would think that's a possibility. And now the only question becomes how quickly not only can you get him on the field in the Z spot, But how quickly can you get him where you're comfortable moving him around as the number three?
Yeah, that's the bigger question. They're kind of one of the same because, you know, if you're getting James Washington on the field heavy snaps, he has to be capable of playing like a seasoned vet. And I know it's maybe unfair to do that and ask that out of a rookie, but that's the way it's got to go in the NFL. So he's got to be someone that has the ability to move around. He may not be perfect in all that. He shouldn't have to do it 20 times, but, you know, if he has to do it for five or so snaps where he's playing slot or he's switching to the X or playing left side of the field, whatever, he's got to be capable of that. But I think he's going to get that nod really early. I'm looking at the stats now, the snap counts now. In week three last year, Juju played 51% of the snaps. That was second most of any receiver, and Juju missed essentially the entire preseason with injuries, and he got hurt the first day of camp, and he still, you know, almost hit the ground running. So I think if Washington is healthy and gets through camp clean and plays a lot more reps there, then he should be able to get an impact right away.
And he's a guy that you would expect, as long as he doesn't miss considerable amount of time during the during training camp in the preseason, he's already taken part in a full complement of the OTAs and the mini camps and all like that. You know, come week one, he should be up to speed with HOTS and, you know, every little thing like that. And, you know, although I haven't researched a lot of his blocking at Oklahoma State, I saw enough where I'm very comfortable with it.
Ditto. Yeah, he's got the tenacity and the want-to and the humility that most receivers don't have of a guy that'll put his hand on the pile and do what's asked of him. So no issues there. Yeah, hopefully he is up to speed and all that. He needs to be, Dave, because if he isn't, other options for that Z spot in 11 personnel not looking too great, and they need that field stretcher that Washington can bring to help kind of open up AB and help open up the offense.
All right, the question becomes five or six, I think, overall when it comes to this position group as far as totals on the 53. There's a giant question mark about Eli Rogers. We already kind of talked about that. You know, not only is a question mark will he get signed by the start of preseason or start of training camp, but is this a guy that can, you know, is healthy and can pick right up where he left off, and does he offer enough to warrant being a number four or number five?
Who was that? I'm sorry, I didn't catch
Eli. Him. Eli Rogers.
Eli. Yeah. Well, first of all, he's just got to get healthy. He's got to get medically cleared, get in camp, get back into football conditioning. So even before I'm worried about exact role and where he fits and all that, you just got to be in a Steelers uniform, you know. So he's a potential backup slot option, which would be nice to have. I mean, you have some other guys that are candidates there. DHB's done it. Tucker is hopefully going to be capable of doing it. Obviously, you have Juju, but you would like to kind of have Eli as another slot guy that can be a punt returner. But for me, he's got to get signed, and the longer that takes, the harder it's going to be for him.
I think it's going to be a huge kind of letdown if Tucker doesn't do enough, you know, during the preseason and all, and to ultimately not make this 53. You know, I think it'll be a huge kind of letdown, if you will. And I think, do you see it as an either or with Rodgers and Tucker?
I think he asked me this before. I mean, I'm inclined to say yes, because if they kept, that would mean they're keeping six if it's both, because you have the three, then DHB, and then Rodgers and Tucker. And I don't know if you're going to have enough of a difference in a style between Tucker and Rodgers to make you want to keep both. But I don't know. I mean, Tucker can do a lot more than Eli can.
Is Mike Tomlin – does Justin Hunter have pictures of Mike Tomlin or something?
does Ben Roethlisberger have those pictures? Because Ben likes his receivers big and Hunter's stuck around. So, you know, again, Hunter's a guy that's all bark, no bite. I mean, he looks, you know, really good. He's looked okay in practice. I thought he got overstated how good of a training camp he had last year. He looked good the first 2 days and without pads. The pads came on, he kind of disappeared. But I talked to Malik Golden today, the Steelers safety, and, you know, I asked him who's been the toughest guy you've had to cover in your first training camp last year, and he didn't want to give me AB, which I appreciated, and he said Justin Hunter's probably the toughest guy because he's such a freaky build and freaky athlete. So he's going to look good in practice, you know, comparatively, but he's never really translated that to the field. So ideally someone beats him out, but if no one does, then Hunter's going to have that defining trait, that size and the theoretical red zone ability that no one else is going to have on this roster. And, you know, he could earn that spot by default.
And he's going to have the trait of not playing special teams.
Yeah, but hey, they've kept some of those guys around in recent years.
Hunter. I was a bit surprised they re-signed him, even though it was a minimum and all like that. Hopefully they can find an alternative to him. In my opinion, something's gone wrong if Hunter makes the 53.
Yeah, like I said, I think he's kind of the default option, and I think you said it well that hopefully they can. I think their hope is that they find someone better, but if they don't, then I mean, I guess you know what you have in Hunter in that sense, that he can kind of, like I said, on paper, give you that spot, and he can play different roles. He played the slot in Buffalo, so I mean, he's got a little position versatility, but ideally, yeah, you're looking for someone else to step up, specifically Tucker.
And DHB, I mean, we know where he's the look. He can still get down the field. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he can still go. But how many catches realistically is he going to give you during a season? And if you get to the point where he's playing a considerable amount of offensive snaps and something's gone horribly wrong, this is Arnez Battle on steroids.
Yeah, but the way the current layout looks, one injury is all it's going to take for DHB to get in the field. I mean, am I wrong about that? And that's assuming that James Washington captures that spot, which is not a done deal yet.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to be your Z?
Yeah, I mean, Hunter would be the other option. I mean, Tucker's played on the outside, but you know, it'd probably be DHB.
All right, a few younger guys worth. I mean, Quadri Henderson. Look, I mean, his ticket's going to be the Stephon Logan ticket, right? He's going to have to make an impact in a return game because, I mean, quite honestly, he's not a, you know, there's not enough there in his resume as a receiver to get excited about.
Yeah, to return all the way, and that's a tough job to try to win in the preseason. There's just so few reps to do it. You know, you're itching to make the big play that causes mistakes, guys. You know, being too careless with the football, that can get you cut. So it's possible, but it's a really tough road.
Damon Patterson is a guy I think is going to get quite a few snaps during the preseason, is going to get an opportunity to show what he has. And look, he's a physical guy. He's a guy that shows up on special teams, but can he show up as a wide receiver against top-notch competition?
Yep, that's going to be the biggest concern there. But, you know, like I said, the Steelers brought in guys that have a special teams heavy background, and that's Patterson, that's Trey Griffey, that's Tevin Jones. And those are guys that ran down, you know, kicks and punts throughout their career in addition to making big plays as receivers. So it's an interesting kind of story, interesting background and resume that not a ton of college receivers have. Patterson was a number one receiver, and he'd go run down punts. And then, you know, so it was pretty wild to watch him work. But it's just about being more consistent, and you know, he's got a slighter build. Can he make those plays, combative catches over the middle? I think he can make some plays vertically, but everything else is going to be the worry with him.
Justin Thomas is a guy that they kept on speed dial quite often last year on the practice squad. What do we know about him?
Not a lot, because he got signed. He was the last guy on the boat, I think, in the preseason last year, and didn't get to really play that much. Came in, I think, the last preseason game for a couple of snaps. Was a quarterback at Georgia Tech, you know, running their option offense under Paul Johnson, switched to receiver. Don't know really much about his game, but yeah, it was him and Jake Rogers getting rotated whenever one was needed last year.
What do you know about Trey Griffey, about his ability to go deep?
I think he's a deep threat too. Just like I said, it was Tevin Jones and Griffey and Patterson are guys that, you know, have the resume of vertical threats with good speed that can play special teams. So I forget all of Griffey's numbers, but those guys have all made some impact plays, you know, both in special teams and you know, vertically with the offense in their college career. So you know, again, they're kind of mini DHBs in kind of that profile, especially Griffey and Jones, because they're bigger guys and Patterson's a little bit smaller.
How do you feel about this year's wide receiver group as you stand here right now?
Yes, I was asked, I think, in my mailbag on Thursday, you know, what's better, the receiver group last year going into camp or the receiver group this year going into camp? And I'm still going to go with last year because, you know, James Washington is still that unknown. I mean, I'm high on James Washington. I think he'll have a good year, but nobody knows yet. Yeah, he hasn't taken a single meaningful snap. So the depth, though, is a concern, because I think, you know, I'm going to assume that Washington plays well his rookie year. And so you have AB, you have Juju, you have James Washington. But what do you have behind that? Because someone's going to get hurt, maybe hopefully for only a week. But what if someone's out for 6 weeks? How are you going to replace him? How's this offense going to work without one of those three guys? And I get worried when I try to come up with an answer.
The thing is about Martavis is, you know, as a whole, at least statistically, there's not a ton that you're having to replace, especially when it comes to deep balls last year. Now, you know, is he a guy when not thrown to make enough difference, you know, in that offense? I mean, look, James Washington, we've seen him be able to go get the deep ball at Oklahoma State over a course of 4 years. The question is now, can he do it at the NFL level? You've got to be able to have the ability to let Ben go deep if he sees that one-on-one coverage on the outside.
Mm-hmm. You need that ever constant threat. And when Bryant wasn't that guy last year, the Steelers offense faltered because of it. And I don't think it's a coincidence that over the last month of the season, when Bryant was finally kind of shaking off the rust and hitting his stride, so did the Steelers offense, including in the playoff game. So while, yes, the Steelers kind of slogged through it with a less than ideal Martavis Bryant last year, you saw the consequences of that. And so that's my concern, that if Washington can't be that guy, or if someone gets hurt and the depth isn't adequate to replace him, the offense is kind of going to be stuck in a rut where it's decent, but it's not maximized because it's lacking that over-the-top threat that's expanding the defense vertically and kind of clearing out the underneath for not only AB, but, you know, Vance McDonald and Juju to work over the middle and checkdowns to Bell. So you just need that deep threat. That's how this Steelers offense functions when it's at its best. And Bryant was capable of that, and when everything came together, you saw that, and now Washington has to be the answer for it.
All right, let's wrap up with a few Twitter questions. We put kind of a late call out there, got a couple of questions in. Dean J. Frederick writes, if the Steelers do get a deal done with Le'Veon Bell, can they still extend Ben next year, and how strapped will that leave them for future years? Look, the cap can be massaged in so many different ways. I go back to what Kevin Colbert said several years ago, and probably more than once. You find a way to keep your good players. And if they do get Bell done, then I'm not worried about cap implications because they'll either restructure somebody. I'm not worried. You know, look, I'm not even convinced that they will extend Ben, but if they need to, they will find a way to get it done. I also kind of look at Bell's situation this way as well, too. Had Ryan Shazier not gotten injured last year, he would have been up for, we would be talking about him probably getting ready to sign an extension right about now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a lucrative one at that. Now, would it have been the same kind of money that Bell's angling for? Probably not, but it still would have been a significant off-season extension. Obviously, now you're not having to do that with him. There's questions whether or not, you know, you're going to have to do it in the future. It all depends on his health, obviously. So, you know, if they were to get Bell done this offseason, I would just look at it as it being Bell replacing a guy that they would assign in Shazier plus a little bit more. I'm not concerned in any way that if they get a deal done with Bell, that it will hinder them and, let's say, an extension for Ben or anything along those lines. The cap can be massaged to accommodate whatever they need to accommodate. And let's be honest, the Steelers are never active during the free agency signing period when it comes to high-dollar free agents. So if you're worried about that, about next offseason, I wouldn't be, because it's just not in their MO to do it. So, no, I'm not, to answer Dean's question, will he still be able to extend Ben next year if they want to? And will they be strapped? No, because they'll find a way to massage the cap, whatever, to make it work if they get a deal done with Bell. Do you concur?
I concur. It wouldn't be Omar Khan's first rodeo figuring out the cap, and it probably won't be his last. So, yes, doable. Ben can get the deal done.
Right. Okay, my buddy Spencer Crick on Twitter. Just how concerned should we be about the defense in 2018? I'm very concerned. Can they get pressure with four? You know, I wrote about this, and we didn't have time to cover this today, but, you know, talking about sort of the stats from Football Outsiders talking about the number of the effectiveness of the pressures, whether it be four-man pressures or more than four or less than four. The problem was is they weren't able to use four-man pressure. When they used four-man pressures, they did an adequate job of getting pressure. But the problem is they need to find a way to get adequate pressure with four or less more than they did. And I still think that that record number of sacks last year was a bit of a mirage. I mean, how many of them came against Cleveland, and seven of them came against the Texans in that, week 16 game against furniture movers at quarterback, put together offensive line. Look, they got to find a way. Pressure and coverage goes hand in hand. I know people are probably tired of Mike Tomlin saying that, but it could never be more on point, in my opinion. And then you throw in the questions about what's going to happen in sub packages here at that inside linebacker position. Bostic going to be the guy there? Is it going to be Matakavage? Are they going to be better against the run in certain situations this year? So, yeah, I'm concerned. This is a defense that hasn't been opportunistic when it comes to turnovers, and I want to start seeing that.
Yeah, I think you covered it well. I mean, I share the similar concerns. I'm sure most of Steelers Nation does as well. Can you get consistent pressure? Pressure that when you go into a playoff game and you're facing a team that isn't, like you said, Cleveland or Houston, that you can get consistent pressure. That was the issue last year. Or who's going to make the splash plays? Who's going to be your playmaker in the front seven or in the secondary? You have some big questions there. So it starts with communication. That's going to be the biggest thing. And obviously, everything sounds good right now. We'll see. I was asking, Malik Golden today how the communication's been, and, he said it's been excellent. They've been talking so much, but everybody says that this time of year. Time will tell. And if they can fix that, that's going to solve a lot of the issues. But yeah, can they get those big plays? And there's a real question about that right now.
Yeah, can they get sacks against someone other than Cleveland? meaningful sacks and all. And look, you can't. We need to see it from those outside guys, from Watt, from Dupree. Need to see more consistent sacks. Aren't everything, but I want to see more. And look, we're in this day and age of the NFL. The quarterbacks get the ball out quicker and quicker. Are we going to see more man coverage? I admit that there's nothing more concerning sometimes in third and whatever to see those corners up off the line of scrimmage giving up those either the curls or the quick outs. To me, I think they're going to have to start playing a little bit more man.
And again, for whatever it's worth, I might actually do a short article on this tomorrow before I do the whole feature with Malik Golden. But I asked him as well if they've played man. He said, yeah, they've been playing a lot more man coverage. And that's kind of echoed, I think, what we've heard from other players. So that's something to keep an eye on.
If you're playing man a little bit more, making that quarterback hold that ball a little bit longer, then you're going to start getting, I think, better results, not only from the sack column, but forcing that quarterback to make some throws he doesn't want to make, and which oftentimes leads to turnovers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it all kind of works together, and so if you don't have one, the other is going to be hurt by it.
So yeah, I am concerned, Spencer, and I think Alex is too. The proof has got to be in the pudding, and got to see it right. Look, they got experienced guys there now. Joe Hayden on the outside, Artie Burns on the outside. We'll see how this flip-flop goes at the outside linebacker position. Hopefully you'll start the season with a healthy Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt. A lot of people may forget that, two plays, three plays into that season opener, they essentially lost Tuitt for a period of time there. That was noticeable. Can Tuitt finish? How many almost sacks has Tuitt had over the years?
Yeah, it's been an issue. It's been one of his biggest problems I've had. In the last year, you can kind of maybe excuse it because he had the bicep injury that he had to play through, but it happened the year before. So Steelers have left some of that stuff on the table.
All right, anything else to add before we wrap this thing up?
I think that's everything I got.
All right. We were able to fill up an hour there. So in the meantime, we'll be back on Friday. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora on Twitter at Alex_Cazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.